Welcome to New Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on cybersecurity and the local Colorado economy, focused on cybersecurity industry growth and initiatives that support cybersecurity economics. We hope this special series on blockchain builds your excitement for a possible future which empowers individual privacy. Please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check out privacyforthepeople.org to see the upcoming crowdfunding campaign. Now sit back and enjoy as we introduce our great guest for today's show.
Hello, I am Dr. Wanda Tisbukusar. I want to welcome you to New Cyber Frontier. Our first guest is Tony Robison, CEO of Pioneer Technology. Mr. Robison, can you share with our listening audience your company and your background?
Thank you, Doctor. My name again is Tony Robinson, Pioneer Technology. I'm the President and Chief CISO, Chief Information Security Officer of Pioneer Technology, and we offer senior level cybersecurity services and staffing.
Wonderful. Tony, can you share with us what you see as the biggest industry problem?
Well, I would like to toss out one and then potentially three items for discussion. One of the issues I like to bring up is what I call the IoT, IOM, Internet of Things, Internet of Medical, lack of governmental focus on standards. And again, IoT, everybody makes jokes about your refrigerators and whatnot. But for me, IoT is your vehicle, your aircraft that you ride in, going to your vacations or to your business trips, traffic lights, water treatment plants, things that have what I call human impact potential. Quite honestly, if your refrigerator gets hacked, I really don't care. It can't kill you. The other thing is Internet of Medical, which is pacemakers, MRIs, other FDA-controlled inventions for medical treatment of humans. And again, a human impact issue. Some other areas I'd like to bring up for concern. For example, one of recent ones I just ran into is the very sudden increase in non-certified or non-experienced individuals purporting to be cybersecurity experts. Again, I've just seen this over the last 3 to 6 months, but it's hitting companies where, quite honestly, my customers calling me in to fix problems that their less vetted staff has created, breaches and whatnot. So those are kind of two major ones. There's many other ones we can discuss, though.
Fantastic. So what do you consider the largest concerns or risks to companies in the cyber industry?
I would say, and this kind of jumps away from the two topics I've talked about, but I would say right now, many people view cybersecurity as almost black magic, this magical item that they have to wave a wand over and they can't really understand it. I usually go and present to board of directors all the way down to the IT workers that cybersecurity really is 50% doing the basics. And when I say basics, I'm talking about the last 30, 40 years of doing basic IT management, patching, passwords, those simple things that people, quite honestly ignore many times in their busy business days. You usually don't see those basics handle until a company gets to a certain size and bring in staff or services to address those, what I call basics.
We'll be with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Can you tell us, because I'm sure our listening audience, in listening to the concerns that you have and the expertise that you have, would want to have access to you? And if someone needs your services, how would they get in contact with you?
Okay. Well, quite honestly, what I provide, you know, many times companies would say, I provide you these security widgets. I provide you with these type of solutions. What I usually tell board of directors and on down is that I provide you a clarity and confidence that you're not breached. That security, once implemented properly, is a non-issue. You can just go on to your normal business days. Many times people view security as something to inhibit business, to restrict business, mm-hmm. and I'm just the completely opposite. Security wraps itself around the business transparently. If we do a good job, and which I have done over the last 30 years, I wrap security around a environment, develop a security strategy that wraps itself and integrate into the business strategy, business vision, and then keep in mind the age-old business concept of return on investment. And the security once implemented that I have done many, many years, usually about a year later, I usually have a CFO ask me, why do we have you here? And the reason being is that the security problems have went away, which is one of the reasons over the last 10 years, I provide metrics to senior leadership. Say, by the way, you just had these Ukrainian hacker teams take a run at you. And oh, by the way, they're coming after the executive staff of the company, try to compromise your home internet to get into the company. And here's the metrics. Because many times in the past, security people, we just do a good job. Like I have, you know, 10 years, 12 years ago, I didn't think about promoting the concept or the metrics that, hey, we just stopped a major player breaking into the company. Mm-hmm. It's part of your job. So just get it done and keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. The only trouble with that is that about a year and a half later, the CFO would ask the question, we are spending X number of dollars on these people. Why do we need them? Nothing ever happens.
Wow.
So that's one of the issues I bring to a company. The issue that the president, the board of directors, the C-levels can sleep at night because their company, their enterprise is secured and monitored. Mm-hmm. So, and to get a hold of me, probably the best way is on LinkedIn. I do have a company website mm-hmm. that's probably at least 10 years out of date. But on LinkedIn is my contact information.
Excellent.
And just reach out. And I'm available. I do work coast to coast and also both in the EU and the Pacific Rim.
Okay. So again, that is CEO Tony Robison with Pioneer Technology. In closing, Mr. Robison has brought some really good points to our attention. Perception that cybersecurity is like some sort of black magic, which it certainly isn't, and the lack of expertise that's warranting the services that he provides, and also having to justify the services once the problems are solved with CFOs of companies.
One of the things that I've seen repeatedly is that security is treated as an afterthought. I would usually, whether you are developing a product, you have a service, or you run in what I call the typical a brick and mortar type of business, manufacturing, insurance, whatever, security is going to be much more expensive to retrofit than stand up in front. I've worked at a very large Detroit automotive OEM, and I used to turn blue in the face discussing this issue with my leadership about how to protect cars, for example. It's going to be much easier to design cybersecurity in the vehicle space, for example, up front. And one of the issues was that, you know, bringing in young engineers who are just being hired and educating them on the concept of cybersecurity in the IoT space. And vehicles are part of the Internet of Things environment, at least from my viewpoint. You know, IoT can include your refrigerator and your toaster, and it includes all the way up to your, you know, cars you drive during the day, the airplanes you fly for business and vacation, and everything in between. IoT is what I call human impact territory, which means humans can get killed if this system is compromised by hackers. So that's one of the things I've always tried to do. I try to get the security environment, whether it's a normal enterprise or a product development environment, to be proactive. Get security upfront, get security inserted into your discussions and your narratives with your engineers, your finance people, your marketing people. And it's no longer a cost issue. It's part of doing business. And I have had a discussion with a fairly large tire manufacturer who was hacked and lost $200 million of R&D. When he's asked me, can I hack China and get his designs back? I have to remind him, no, sir, you can't. First of all, I go to jail for that. That's, I think, a 15-year felony. And once somebody hacks it, whether it goes to Ukraine or to Russia or China, it's gone. So again, you know, it's a learning experience. You try to get, you know, C levels, instead of worrying about the event of the moment, to step back and become proactive. How do we stop this from happening in the future? What steps do we have to do and implement? And since, Doctor, you mentioned your heavy academic background, I've worked with many colleges that have the same problem. Colleges are engines of intellectual property development. They create new patents, they create new software, they create new music and art and everything else. And guess what's stolen and monetized offshore? All the stuff that you have at, that been developed in schools. So quite honestly, I joke with people that actually I'm only 28, but cybersecurity put the gray hairs on me that you see today. And I would say half of those gray hairs I've tried to talk to universities. And I'm going to call a few of them out. You know, mm-hmm. University of Michigan, OSU, and quite a few others. These universities create huge amounts of wealth in intellectual property, and they're very cavalier about hiding behind the concept that we're a university, we have to have academic freedom. And I completely agree with them. Yes, freedom to develop, freedom to partner, but not freedom to be stupid. Mm-hmm. And when you have hundreds of millions of dollars of potential new products being stolen, I have to ask you, is that a good, wise use of taxpayers' money? But that's, again, that goes back to cybersecurity, doing the basics. Yeah, you don't have to lock down an environment to keep it secure. The issue of, the issue of IoT, when I mentioned the lack of leadership, this is primarily with industrial groups and the federal government. And quite honestly, I believe it. They're just afraid to really make mandates because many of the people in charge of cybersecurity within the government really don't have the experience or engineering background to say, by the way, for cars, we should do these basic things. Yes, get to that small step. Or for example, with the Amazon and Google home device, there's many privacy issues and cybersecurity issues within those little devices that you can order things, they can listen to you, you can adjust your house with it. But hackers can also use that to compromise your privacy. The third item I want to bring up is the whole issue of cybersecurity industry itself. I've been doing this for 30 some years, and I like to say that back in late 80s, I used to do cybersecurity until about 99, 2000, when people started asking me, Tony, you come with great references, you come with great, you know, people sing your praises about doing cybersecurity, but how do we know that you know what you're talking about? Do you have any certifications like a CPA? So back in 99, I went and looked for the biggest, baddest junkyard dog I can get certified by, and my first certification with the NSA, a small group down in D.C. at Fort Meade. And that was the only certification at that time, and after that, we have industrial organization like ISACA and ISSP and a bunch of others creating new certifications. The trouble we have nowadays is that many people who could not spell cybersecurity a year ago are all of a sudden showing up in companies with 10 years of experience and all these certifications. So I recommend companies, please do a good background check. Mm-hmm. Please validate. You can call up ISACA, ask people for their certificate number and validate it with the company. I mean, with the organization like ISACA or ISSP or any of the others. So even though I was born and bred in Michigan, I kind of come from Missouri, the show me state. I always believe in validating everything I see. But those are the three big issues, you know, that I still think that people need to be aware of.
Okay, Mr. Robinson, in wrapping up before our sponsor break, what I'm hearing is cybersecurity is a way of doing business because once your company is hacked, it's irreversible. And for that reason, if you're in the business of creating huge wealth with intellectual property, an example would be universities and colleges, you cannot afford to have a cavalier attitude. And with that said, let's take a break for our sponsors. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Mr. Robinson, welcome back. We're going to continue with Mr. Robinson, CEO of Pioneer Technology, and his elaborating mainly on some of his concerns and some frustrations with the cybersecurity industry. Welcome back.
Thank you, Doctor. Well, I usually try to stay off my soapbox because I get kind of wound up about it. The one issue I always try to stress to my clients, many times there's a conflict of interest you find within companies because they view cybersecurity should be put underneath a CIO or should answer the CFO, or in a perfect environment, it should answer to the risk officer or to the CEO. But in many cases, you have to stress the point in security. Security, in the security sector, we own no assets. Okay, we own the risk. And many times when I talk to CIOs or directors of companies or managing directors of companies or even deans of universities, I usually say security has no ownership of your assets. You own the assets, you own the technology that your staff, your students, your employees work on, but security, we have to own the risk and we have to implement a risk model and a strategy that basically backs off the risk and contains it and manages it. And this is the issue that you have when you have a properly orchestrated and strategic mindset for security. You're going to find that security itself becomes almost second nature. Many times I tell senior leadership, in the case that I get brought into, is that security for me is, you can tie an arm behind my back and I can still get you secure. What the big issue and the big challenge I've always had is awareness. Is the acceptance of the management of the organization, leadership of the organization, into a security mindset that it's not fire and forget. We do, you know, we worry about it when the breach has happened. No. We want to be proactive. We want to protect your intellectual property because that's makes you millions and millions of dollars, guys. You know, one song that got stolen could be your chart topper, or maybe that new design will allow you to find a cure for cancer. Again, protect it. But again, security in itself should be rather, the first 50% is doing the basics right, and the next 50% is doing what I call strategic implementation of security. If you're a small company making chocolate treats for a small hometown crowd, you probably don't need too much in regards to above basics. But for example, if you are a hedge fund that owns 14 manufacturing plants, two R&D centers, I guarantee that you're a target for nation states. And now your game is much harder to pick up. The other thing I would bring up to people is that the use of the dark web. Typically, people hear dark web, you know, you think of all the bad things that could possibly happen on the internet, and you're right. You know, you got trafficking going on board, you got weapons, you got, it's a very nasty place. But on the flip side of it, how I use the dark web is that basically when a company says, we think we've been breached, I activate my team and my team goes out and do a dark web recon, and we find things about the hackers who are attacking the clients. In one case, for example, and this is not a slight against the FBI, I worked with the FBI since, I want to say 2003, 2006, their cyber division. Great people, definitely underpaid. But in case any of you are listening right now, I really appreciate the work you do. But in many cases, the FBI may or may not know who hacked you, or it may be part of a counter intel operation where they won't tell you. So again, the FBI has bigger problems on their plate than just your small company or your big company being hacked. By having the right security team coming in and do a dark web scan, in many cases, we found out the hacker. We found where the hacker team is located. In one case, we found out the hacker team was in the Ukraine, but the leadership was based out of the southern bay of San Francisco. And well, by the way, here's his apartment number, his gym, and his gym locker number that we found on the dark web. And all that was provided to the FBI that arrested the gentleman, you know, months later after their own investigation. But so by leveraging the dark web, you can find out who's attacking you. And this goes a long way for providing awareness to senior leadership. Many times, like I mentioned before, in the tire situation where a tire company was hacked, these companies just feel that, well, you know, this must be a bunch of criminals, and so they will, you know, go back and hack them and get my stuff back, Mr. Robinson. And I have to explain to them that this is in coming out of Ukraine and Russia and China, this is government-sponsored espionage. It's nothing personal. They just want money or your products. And, you know, again, that's the reason why I'm very adamant. Senior leadership, whether you're a school, academic, environment, whether you are an R&D or manufacturing, or maybe you're just a local record shop that has some really great, innovative, you know, people making music. What you create, people want to steal, people want to monetize, and the monetization is for them and not you. So I kind of touched on a number of topics there. If there's anything specific, Doctor, you want like me to drill down on?
Okay, I'm just going to highlight some things that you've said that have really spoken to me. That the biggest issue is awareness and being proactive as senior leadership, you see, is a big problem. Organizations need to protect their design. And the first 50% is design. The second is your strategic implementation. And the use of the dark web, which is a trafficking web, which I found very interesting. And the dark web recon is where you go to find out where one's been breached. And interestingly, you find the location, you have to identify it, and it can be out of the country. Actually, it seems like most of the time it's out of the country, but it can also be headquartered right here in the U.S. And again, once a company's intellectual property has been breached, it is irreversible. The damage is done. And that's why this proactiveness and awareness is paramount, because we're speaking of government espionage. People want to monetize off of your intellectual property, so it must be taken seriously.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
The only thing I want to toss out is that this typically overwhelms most C-level, most leadership, because again, they've just been trained in, and no offense, they've been trained in business, they've been trained in finance. They believe in the Queen's rules of boxing, you know, where you stay in your corner and everybody follows the rules. And now we have basically rules goes out the window and you have hackers coming after you to take down your business. So again, it's not impossible to protect yourself. It's overwhelming sometimes, but that's the reason why, you know, one of the problems we talked about is that there's apparently in the United States alone, there's 2.5, or I heard a study like 3 million open cybersecurity positions. And I think that sometimes that overwhelms companies or academic environments that they need to find good people. And you do. But the issue that many of my peers run into is that, I hate to bring it up, but the issue of ageism that happens in the cybersecurity world. When I was with an automotive environment, the first week I had probably easily 500 people ask me, who do I know? And I said, I know no one. I got hired. And then later on, one of the younger guys, about 28, who's been there for about 7 years, came up to me and goes, Tony, the reason why they're saying that to you, all your gray hair, if you notice around here, there's not too many people over 45 working here, unless you're senior leadership. And so that brings up kind of a, you know, kind of a nasty issue within the cybersecurity world. There are tons of good people over 45 with good experience that if I could reach in and talk to every HR person and leadership figures saying, reach out for the retirees, reach out for people with 20 or 30 years of experience out there and leverage them. Cybersecurity is not a new issue. I mean, I started it, quite honestly, and I'm showing my age now. I started back in about 84, 85 in the that issue. And I learned from some very good people who did cybersecurity for things like the Strategic Air Command, bomber bases, missile environments. They had cybersecurity back in the, you know, late 60s, early 70s. So when you can learn from people like that, that's one of the reasons why I mentor quite heavily. I pay forward to younger security people. And again, they don't need me to teach them tools. They need me to teach them strategy, tactical implementation, how to deal with budgets and angry CFOs, you know, all those little nuts and bolts issues to stop the bad guys, because it is a package.
You're speaking to one of the courses I teach is career planning and management. So when you were talking about how senior leaders are being prepared, and it's not in cybersecurity, it really spoke to me. And the issue of ageism, yeah, I've discovered that as a career coach. It's a big issue. So much so, I've even had to suggest to clients that they use a functional resume so no one can quickly identify until they show up for the interview how old they are. And that's a tragedy, because we are missing historical evidence and experience of people who can solve some major problems who have that background. And our senior leaders need to be coached and mentored by these individuals. So I have to agree with you totally, because I too have worked in industry and I've seen the chaos as a result of many of the issues that you have pointed out. And I really appreciate you sharing your values with us today.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
You're very welcome, Mr. Robbins. We are now going to end our interview with Tony Robinson. And I want to reiterate that we really appreciate him taking time out of his busy day to share with us and what he has done with his company, Pioneer Technology. Have a fantastic day.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors links to
because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.